it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. And joining me now is the head football coach over at the University of Memphis ahead of a massive game coming up on Saturday, 11 a.m. in Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium against South Florida. He is Ryan Silverfield on X at R Silverfield. Coach, how's it going?
Good, Gabe. Thanks for having me on, as always. The guys have had a great week. You know, we talked about putting to bed last week and learning from the mistakes and what happened, and then just having great focus on the task ahead. And like you mentioned, the massive game on Saturday, our next opponent, a great one coming to town, but glad it's at home and ready to get back at it.
All right. Now, I have a couple questions about last week, then we'll put it to bed. But you sort of answered it a little bit there at the top, but how is the team taking it? Because I from being on the inside not too long ago, I know that 180 switch from the outside of the locker room after a loss. It's always an interesting one from the inside looking out. Good teams don't let it affect them, though. Where have your guys been at? How quickly did they put it to bed?
Sure. You know, it's very similar. You know, we talk and talked about this in the past, but even right after the Arkansas game, I said, that game's in the past, guys. Like, it's Sunday. That game, we learn from it. We learn from the good. We learn from the bad. And we have to focus, you know, ahead. And it was no different, right? Florida State last year. And I said, guys, we're going on the road versus Navy. Like, if we don't do what we're capable of doing, we're going to get beat. And, you know, and I, to be fully transparent, I thought our guys had a great week of preparation leading up to the game. Obviously, we had some critical, critical errors and didn't execute. So when it's all said and done, it led to a loss and a disappointing one. They're all disappointing. But I told the guys, I said, listen, all we can do is learn from that and focus moving forward. And our guys have been great. They're a resilient group. Their bounce back, the pep and the step. I said, you know, on Sunday, yeah, it's still hurt. But, man, come Monday when you walk back in this building, I need your eyes up. I need you guys dialed in. And they've been great, had great energy at practice, great focus. They're excited about this opportunity this Saturday.
All right, now, this past Saturday, you guys were a lot more pass-heavy this past week. Obviously didn't run as many plays either offensively, but what did you guys see offensively or within the flow of the game that sort of dictated that?
Well, you know, one, there was we thought there was ability because most teams have had some success passing on them, right? And clearly, obviously, we did not have the success we were hoping for passing on them, but teams had not run as well. They were more stout in the run game and did some better things. And ultimately, when it was all said and done, the way the flow of the game was going, you and I both know, right? It almost felt like an old game versus one of the triple option teams. You're like, okay, we had the ball for what, four plays in the first quarter as an offense. And we never got into a rhythm. Obviously you always want to return kickoffs for touchdowns and
yeah.
Kudos to Sutton. But you know, all of a sudden they put together these 15, UAB put together these 15 play drives, a 12 play drive, a 14 play drive. And defensively we're used to getting off the ball and finding ways to get off the field. Obviously we didn't. And that dictated it. And, you know, a lot of our games are RPO driven. And if some of the reads were there and not the ability to hand the ball off and our read calls for us to pass it, but we didn't execute at a high enough level in any facet.
All right. Now, your first look last week, not the perfect circumstances for a young quarterback by any stretch of the imagination, but your first look at A.J. Hill. He had the one interception. I think the operative word there would be miscommunication on that one interception. That seems to be the word we use for ones like that. Certainly probably a learning moment for him in film this week. But how did you feel about his first extended run quarterback in the team?
Yeah, so let's start with the positives, right? I mean, the young man was calm, cool, collected. He had an understanding of the game plan. And anytime all of a sudden, okay, hey, wait, your number's called, go in the game, go handle your business, right? The reaction of whether it's Arrington Maiden or A.J. Hill, that's what you want to see. And he's like, great, let's go. And he kind of has that demeanor like Seth Hennigan, right? Never too high, never too low. Very calm, and that is obviously very settling for coaching staff and the other players. They're like, all right, let's go. Let's see what the young guy's got. And so I was pleased with that, the ability to go out there. He made some dynamic throws, as we all know. I think, you know, there's flashes where people and fans were probably like, oh,
yep.
Holy cow. Yeah, that's what that young man's all about. And then, you know, and he'll be the first to say, and I don't want to be too critical because he is a 17 or 18-year-old, right? And I was very protective of Seth Hennigan early in his career, as you guys well remember. And people said, well, Seth can't play here. He's not good enough. A few years later, yeah, Seth's great. Let's keep him. Ultimately, AJ, you know, there's some errors that he wishes he had some throws back. We talked about one of them just a second ago. And then ultimately, yeah, I think some of the management towards the goal line in the tight red zone, probably some things that he could help clean up and get fixed. You know, I've been a while since we've had two delay a game and two false starts down there. So overall, that's things that I think with time will improve. And ultimately, unfortunately, it probably led to a loss.
All right. Now, Brendan Lewis, he's listed as day-to-day. That's what you said earlier in the week. And I know we're going to get the availability report, but I'm going to ask, what more can you add? Even if he's not able to go this week, is this long-term, short-term? What are we looking at with Brendan going forward?
Yeah, it is day-to-day. We'll kind of figure this thing out as we move forward. You know, if he can play, you know, he's a tough young man, and he'll do everything he can to. If not this week, then maybe it's next, or you know, next week's a short week. So maybe, again, I like a lot of those things. You never really know. And then ultimately, right, we've got two other quarterbacks that we've got great faith in. And I know one of the questions is okay, then if not be Lou, then who's the next guy up? And I'm kind of getting a feel for it, right? The hay is not in the barn. We got to walk through this morning, kind of figure out who can step up. Is it Arrington? Is it AJ? And great faith in both of them. And, you know, maybe at some point we'll also throw some of these other quarterbacks out there and see what they're capable of. Grant Troutman's on the roster as well. You know, the more we can throw at USF, make them prepared, maybe the better off we are.
Now, AJ and Arrington, you've mentioned both on the table to play if Brendan can't go this week. What went into the decision last week to go with AJ, right? Did you go into the game with that plan, with that backup plan in place, or was that sort of a at the moment decision?
Yes, sir. So, yeah, you know, some of the other ones had been, helmet popped off, Arrington go in the game, right? And then obviously, you know, when Bielu went down previously in the season with an injury, Arrington went down. But we've truly based it off of who's had the best week of practice because they're both really good young quarterbacks that we truly believe in. And this is not coach speak, lip service, Gabe. This is, you know, we got two legit young guys, and that's a great thing to have. I think most programs in the country would beg to have, you know, a young quarterback, just one of them that they have high belief in. We've got two. And so what we've done is they alternate during the week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this week maybe they've alternated with the ones and the twos if Bielu can't go. But in weeks past, you know, okay, hey, they're just rotating who gets the two reps. And then ultimately trying to figure that out, who had the best week of practice. They both prepare. I mean, they're both in the building early, understand the game plan. Then it's, hey, this guy seems to have a better understanding what's the defense give us. And that's a week-to-week thing. And I think ultimately that's best. If there was one that was significantly better than the other, sure, right? We're always going to do what's best for this program in the now. But ultimately, the nice thing is there are options there.
So what I'm hearing is weeks worth of competition for the most part with these two guys. And then a game plan thing to a certain extent, depending on what the skill set looks like and what the defense looks like that you're playing on the other side.
Yes, sir. You're exactly right. Absolutely.
I hear you. All right, now to USF. We know the head of the snake there at South Florida. That quarterback's a heck of a quarterback. Byron Brown. You've dealt with a dual threat earlier this year with Taylen Green at 11 a.m. and also at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. But what are the differences in style of play that you see on tape? I have seen from Byron, he seems to be a way more compact runner than Taylen was. He requires second and third efforts to tackle at times. Certainly hard to bring down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is, my guess, every bit of 230. They both have speed, and Brown is a 230, maybe 235 pound. I mean, he's got thick legs. The difference, USF takes shots, right? I mean, first play of the game, my guess is they're going to try to take a deep ball shot and trust and see what our corners and our coverage looks like. And guess what? Then the second play, they may hurry up and line up and do the exact same thing again. And then what you've seen is sometimes on those third downs, it's not there. Cool. I'm just going to line up and run. So, Arkansas's quarterback run game a lot was based off of zone reads, right? How mm-hmm. that didn't play it. If he bites, I'm going to keep it. A limited quarterback draw game, whereas USF will line up on a first and 10 also and say, okay, this play, we're not going to run a deep ball shot. We're going to just run a true quarterback power, right? Or we're going to line up and run a quarterback draw that's 100% quarterback run game. And they've got great faith in that, and they've had success. You watch some of these games, even, second five, well, their best call for them is, hey, quarterback run game. I mean, he's their leading rusher. He's got dynamic arm strength. They've got a skill set at wide receivers, obviously, with speed. They got multiple running backs that they feel can play at a high level. Their offensive line's improved. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, they're one of the fastest tempo teams in the country. So you put all that together. Defensively, we got to get lined up quickly, and we have to be able to find ways to get them down. We have to find a way to get some stops and get off the ball and get off the field. And ultimately, that's what this game's going to come down to.
You brought up the offensive line. That's something I have been impressed with the other side, South Florida, this week, is the trench makeover. It seems that they've had from last year to this year, really the past 2 years to this year. What are you seeing from their lines of scrimmage? They have jumped into both the top 20s of rush yards per game and rush yards allowed per game. It's been a nice little rebuild for them on both sides in the trenches.
Absolutely. They've done a great job of investing, with Rev Sharon and NIL, and they knew that that was a priority for them. Even talking with their head coach in the offseason, like that had to be a priority, and they've done a nice job with it, right? They understand that their quarterback makes everything go, and they understand how important that is. And then, defensively with their scheme, their D-line, they want to be able to get to the quarterback with just, a four-man rush or a three-man and add a guy. That's kind of what they feel like they've got the ability to do. And they're great at it. I mean, listen, they're also first in the conference in takeaways, with forced fumbles and interceptions. So it's not just this offensive juggernaut. They're playing really high level on defense as well. I don't think you can go, I don't care, you can say what you want about the University of Florida, but it's hard to go into an SEC opponent in the swamp and hold the opponent under 20 points, right? And then go and do what they did to Boise if you're not a well-rounded football team.
Yep. Now, we're seven games into this thing. Cold weather starts to hit, and nicks and bruises tend to happen, and some injuries tend to happen at this point in the season. Outside of Brendan, how do you feel about the health of your team at this point in the season?
Yeah, we are chipped up. Like you said, it's this far into the season. There's guys, obviously, we know that have been lost for the season. They've been well documented. There's some other guys that were a little bit chipped up last game that may not be able to go this one. But that's the nature of it. That's our job as coaches, to get whoever is available ready to play. And I don't care if it's a quarterback or a wide receiver or a linebacker or a long snapper, that's our job as coaches. In our approach every week is whoever's available, let's throw them in the mix and see what they're capable of doing.
All right, now final thing. This is a bit off the normal topic of the games and everything else, but I saw this morning. This was in the NBA. Chauncey Billups, the head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers, Terry Rozier, a player, both been arrested by the FBI for illegal gambling. And this is something that just, it feels like a weekly occurrence, Coach. I mean, it's constant. And in the NCAA, I believe I saw it a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if it's implemented yet. You could sort of enlighten me on that, but players and coaches are now sort of in that space where they're going to be allowed to potentially bet on professional games. What goes into the conversations behind the scenes with your coaches, with your players, and the education that goes into it to keep them from having something like that happen? Because this is something that, you know, you feel like can't happen to you until it's right in your backyard. So what do you guys do on your end with something like that? Because it's a beast, and it continues to happen on a consistent basis, college and pro level.
Yeah, Gabe, you're exactly right. I mean, it's the word you used a little bit ago was educate, and that's our job. My job as the head coach in this program, right, for all 200 people, is to educate them on the rules, educate them on, you know, how they need to do things in society, and continue to press it. And guess what? We do it almost weekly, but we educate them daily on things that occur, guys that get in trouble in other sports and things that occur. So, you know, actually what we'll do is we will show our guys, hey, listen, you know, here are two, one's an NBA coach and the other's a player that got arrested for gambling. We can't do it. And we're constantly showing them anybody that makes those mistakes in society that this isn't, you can't do this. And even though they may or may not allow betting on pro sports right now, that's something we can address in the off season, see what that looks like. But no different, right? The same way we educate our guys with financial literacy, you know, with substance abuse, the same way we educate them about, like, hey, not getting behind the wheel, if you're drinking, all of the things that we can continue to do, it's my job to continue to press them on that. But there's now examples, like you said, Gabe, it almost seems weekly. And so I tell them, and you know what I'm going to do today? The exact same thing. Hey, guys, can we bet on an NBA game tonight? And to a T, everybody will say no. Okay, hey, guys, can we bet on one of the exhibition college softball games? To a T, they'll all say no way. Okay, can I go play cards tonight in a poker game and bet $5? And they'll say sure. You know, but even then, I just, guys, it's not even worth doing the fantasy football, even if it's right, free or for a T-shirt. Like, let's just stay away from that. And that's my job, is to constantly just shove it down their throat, because you're right, you know, and I know every college program is educating their guys, but it just continues to show up. And it's scary because it can obviously, now you're seeing people being arrested because of it. And you hope that you never find people within your program and that are, you have the ability to touch on a day to day making those decisions.
Yeah. Now, I know the NCAA would look at the rule that they're trying to implement as maybe, you know, try to be common sense. I don't know what the idea is there. I personally think it opens up a can of worms. How do you feel about, you know, the direction that the NCAA headed in with, you know, potentially allowing coaches and players? This isn't just players. This can be the grown-ups in the room as well, right? You know, to bet on professional sports. Like, it to me, and I don't know your opinion, you're allowed to let me know, but it certainly seems like that's a can of worms that we need to be careful with. You know, that tube of toothpaste, we need to probably keep that as closed as long as possible.
Yeah, you know, Gabe, look, without going, you know, on my soapbox and all that stuff, one, the NCAA is never going to ask my opinion on anything. And
sure.
If they do, we'll probably go the opposite direction.
Right.
So ultimately, listen, I'm all about trying to protect the players. And you know, now this is year 27 doing this, you know, at every level. And ultimately, like, truly, whether it's transfer portal or whether it's revenue share, whatever, it's betting on sports, like, what do I truly feel in my heart of hearts is best for 18 to 23 year olds, right? And if it's paying them a lot of money, great. If it's allowing them to bet on sports, so be it. But I just want them to constantly make sure they're making great decisions with their money, whether they're receiving, you know, $3 a day or $300 a day. I want to make sure they're being smart with it. They're still young as they continue to mature and understand things, right? We know how hard it is for guys to save money. It doesn't matter your age or your wealth, ultimately. So I'm just always wary of things. I want to make sure we're continuing to study this, and are there plans in place that we can all help to educate them on how to be smart with this? You know, because the last thing you want is you know, one of your players saying, yeah, I just bet $10,000 on this game,
right,
because my buddy told me that, you know, he's got to go off, and he, you know, he played here 2 years ago. And you're always worried. I'm worried about every single thing with my guys. I'm worried about them getting to study hall on time. I'm worried about them making great decisions. I'm worried about, you know, them understanding what they need to do on third and one. And that's just another element that we're always trying to protect them. And at this time right now, I'd rather not add another wrinkle to possibilities of things that could occur.
I hear you. Well, Coach, I'll let you roll. I appreciate it. Good luck coming up on Saturday.
Absolutely. Tiger fans, look forward to seeing you guys. We need you there loud and proud. Go Tigers, go.
Yes, sir. He is Ryan Silverfield at R Silverfield on X. He's head football coach over at the University of Memphis. Big, big test coming up this weekend against South Florida, number 18 team in the country, right there at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, 11 a.m. So we will see how it all plays out, but appreciate Ryan for carving out a little bit of time. Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, though. And when we come back, we'll hop into the Blitz right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
Gabe, we had something frightening happen.
We're screwed. Can we just say
yesterday?
It? We're screwed. We're all screwed.
It's here. It's the comet that has been heading toward the Earth is about to hit. Victor Wembanyama finished last night with 40 points, 15 rebounds, 3 blocks, and a team-high plus 31 en route to a 125-92 win over the Mavericks. And I think he shot 15 to 21 from the field.
Yeah, he's an absolute alien.
While
he didn't even have to take
multiple step-backs.
He didn't have to take threes. But he's really good from the mid-range. We know he's good from the three-point line. There's two plays in particular, highlight plays that stuck out to me that I'm just like, I've never seen a seven-footer ever do this. Ever. There was one where he just spikes a ball on the defensive end, gets the run out. They give it to him to bring it up the floor. He gives dribble moves to the opposing center, two steps back, cans a 3-and-1, gets a 4-point play after getting a block on that end and bringing the ball up the floor. He is 7'5".
Oh, he's taller than that. He's like 7'7".
It's not okay. It's not okay. I've never seen it in my life. Like the amount of grace he has as a basketball player at that size, his dribble moves. Like, think about how much ground the ball has to cover with him being 7'5", 7'6", whatever the hell it is. He still is able to get past anybody he wants to. He turned the ball over, once or twice last night? I mean, not even – it's not a problem. So that sequence was unbelievable to me. And then, I don't know if you saw it. He's in the short corner, basically. He's got a one-on-one with Derek Lively. I believe it was Derek Lively. Somebody could correct me on that. But he pump fakes him up, goes around, goes baseline. He gets a contest on the front side of the rim, so he brings it back around, and while he's about to land on the ground, he's like inches away from the ground.
He really just took a step.
He reverses it behind his head and puts it in the hoop.
Less of a jump, more of a step.
It's not okay. And if he plays the requisite amount of games this year with the role he now has, he's going to be first team all NBA. He's going to be pressing for an MVP, and that Spurs team,
defensive player of the year.
Defensive player of the year, that's a given.
Right.
Although Jaren had 6 blocks last night.
Jaren was great.
Good start, but he did foul out. But I mean, Wimby is going to press for every award that there is in the NBA. I mean, the guy is unguardable and undeniable at this point. We're going into year three. He was with Shaolin monks this offseason. I think we should have banned him from ever meeting with Hakeem Olajuwon. That's just unfair. He should not be able to take in lessons from that goat right there. But if you have been debating whether or not this day was going to come and with Victor Wembanyama was going to eventually take over the NBA, if you had debated that, stop debating it. He's here, and he's here to stay. As long as the injury bug doesn't bite, which it has his first 2 years, he is unquestionably a top five player, top three player in the NBA going forward. That's how I feel.
You asked me how many turnovers he had last night. Zero. Zero turnovers.
Wait, what? I thought he had one,
zero.
At least.
Zero turnovers.
He had zero?
Zero turnovers. With the ball in his hands as much as it was, he had zero turnovers, 40 points, 15 rebounds, three blocks, one assist, but that didn't really matter. 15 to 21 from the field. And
here's the thing. The Mavs are one of the biggest teams in the NBA. Now, they have their own problems. Last night, it was very clear. The Kyrie Irving injury is going to really bother them the entire season until he comes back. But they're one of the biggest teams in the NBA. They start two bigs, and those two bigs are Derek Lively and Anthony Davis, two really good defensive bigs that are both over 7 foot.
And they have P.J. Washington on the court.
Yeah, and they can't do anything.
Didn't matter.
By the way, the guy guarding him on that short – that was P.J. Washington.
Was it P.J.?
He faked him up in the air. But if he can do that against a big-ass, good defensive Mavs team, he can do that against anybody in the NBA easily. It was unreasonable to watch. He's an alien.
We've never seen someone with that size move with the agility that he has. And that's why
the finesse, the grace, crazy.
When we were coming up with what we wanted to talk about on the Blitz, I did say to you, I said, I do think that we have to make it illegal for Victor Wembanyama to train with Shaolin monks and Hakeem Olajuwon. It should be against the law. We need to contact the FBI. What's happening is going to destroy every team.
Gilbert Arenas? Snitch on Victor Wembanyama.
Lunch on us if you snitch on Victor Wembanyama. But, you know, this offseason, people were saying Wimby got taller. And he certainly, when you're watching the game and you're watching the highlights, he does look like he's bigger than he was last year. And he's putting on strength. And that reverse dunk that he had. He didn't really even jump. He just took a step, and you're like,
he's so long. He can dunk standing. He probably can dunk standing.
I also brought this up to you.
He can jump pretty high.
It feels like in the year of our Lord 2025, we are witnessing two of the greatest young talents sports has ever seen in Shohei Ohtani in the MLB. Because he put on genuinely the best playoff game you could possibly
Understood.
Have.
Understood, yes.
And then a few weeks later, we're watching Wembanyama, and we're like, oh, it's arrived. The new era of athletes and superstars
have arrived. Discussed the Shohei Ohtani thing, how nuts that was.
It was insane.
Three home runs, 3 for 3, a walk, and 6 innings pitched.
10 Ks, just mowing people down. I watched Shohei Ohtani hit a ball out of Dodger Stadium, and then he threw a pitch 99 miles per hour 5 minutes later. I was like, what is happening right now?
How? But Victor Wembanyama, I
think Jeffrey said it. He looked it up. Babe Ruth never hit a home run in a game that he pitched. And Shohei hit 3.
Oh, my gosh. We're all screwed. Victor Wembanyama is here. And there's nothing you can do to stop this momentum he has.
And you and I have been talking about this since he got drafted. We were like, you have like 2 years, 2 or 3 years before Wimby will really start to figure things out. And last year before he got injured, he was really figuring it out. And it seems like this offseason, all the training that he did, he has arrived.
And let's not forget about the Spurs getting better around the edges.
That's exactly where I was going. Not only did Wimby get better, the Spurs have also gotten better.
Stephon Castle, 22-7-6 in the opening game, 8 for 12 from the field, and he made a 3. Still bad from the free throw line, but he was.
They have a good roster. I think that Dylan Harper is going to be for real in the NBA. He had 15 points last night.
Keldon Johnson is a bench player.
Keldon Johnson's really good.
He's really good.
Still have Vassell. Like, they have real dudes
Dylan Harper
on this
15
team
in his debut. I mean, this is Carter Bryant. I think it's only a matter of time before he becomes one of those sort of premier defensive players. We'll see if the offense can come along.
Oh, and don't forget, guy that's hurt right now, De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
To pair with Victor Wembanyama.
And Devin Vassell's a hell of a scorer.
The Spurs are one of those teams where they are not going to be a team that you want to see in the playoffs. I think that they can make it to the playoffs this year, and they are the type of team in a series that can torture you because they have guys who can shoot, they have speed, and they can play defense, and they're well coached. Those are the teams in the playoffs that can give you fits, especially when you have a player like Victor Wembanyama. If he is healthy by the end of the season and they make it to the playoffs, I would not be shocked if the Spurs can upset a team.
I agree with every utterance.
Lane Kiffin was asked about how the college football playoff should be seeded and chosen on his Wednesday SEC Zoom call, and here's what he had to say. What would Vegas do? They're the best at what they do by far. Way better than any committee. Way better than anybody.
Oh, God. A lot of problems with this. Lane, no, they're not. They're not. You were favored by, what, 28 against Washington State? You won by 3? Also, worth mentioning, do you know who the Heisman favorite was coming into the year? I'm sure you do.
Was it Nussmeier?
Arch Manning.
Oh, God, that's right.
Do you know who were the two teams with the shortest odds to win the national championship coming into the year?
Texas.
Texas and Penn State. So, no, they're not very good at this. I mean, like, their whole game is to get 50% of the money on one side and 50% on the other. They're always trying to turn a profit. So, no, Vegas should have nothing to do with this. And also, if we went this route, why wouldn't we just take their preseason rankings and do the playoff then? Why do we play the games? What's the point of it? You know what I mean? Like, it's foolish to me. It's foolish to me. And then he went on to say, when you look at teams and you're comparing them, if it was a neutral game, what would Vegas make the spread? And that should tell you who the better team is. No, because spreads get beat all the time. Memphis, I watched them go to UAB as a 23.5-point favorite and lose the ball game outright by 7. So, no, I listen, I hope he said this tongue-in-cheek. I hope this was a hee-hee-ha-ha moment for him, because he tends to have those, and he's going to speak his mind however he sees fit. But this is a awful idea and a ridiculous thing to say. Vegas is just because you're favored in a neutral site game over another team does not mean you're a better team. We've learned that time and time again over the years, and I just think this, if this was a serious comment from Lane Kiffin, I think it's a very stupid one. Very stupid one.
I feel like it was probably a bit tongue-in-cheek.
I would hope so.
Knowing who Lane Kiffin is and knowing how sticky talking about Vegas and college athletics right now can be,
he needs to be more careful, man. stop giving Vegas too much credit. Stop talking about how in the LSU game you need to hit the over. You know, after the Kentucky game, he said sorry to all the bettors when Mark Stoops and Kentucky kicked that late field goal early in the season. He needs to be more careful, brother. Yeah. The FBI is going to be knocking down his door to try to, you know, get some hard drives, see what he's been doing.
By the way, I haven't really been able to talk about Lane Kiffin much because I'm running around this week, stars and guitars stuff. There's no way he takes that Florida job. There's no reason to go.
I don't know.
I just don't think there's any reason for him to go to Florida.
I don't think so either. Look, I think if you're just generally talking about those two jobs over the years, historically, Florida's the better job. But I think we need to start viewing college jobs, especially at that level, like the high level, top half, P4 of Big Ten, SEC. I think we need to start looking at them as like NFL franchises. If you're, you know, who am I working with? Can I win a championship from here? He's shown that he can get there, at least close to there at Ole Miss. He seems to be on the track this year. He's been on the track multiple years in the past. But I would be concerned if I'm looking at Florida. It's like the NFL franchise who has 4 different coaches in, you know, a 10-year span. That's what Florida's basically been. Like, you have to be careful. Who am I working with? How many cooks are in the kitchen when I get there? Who's really pulling the strings? Do I have full say of what's going on around me? That would keep me away from Florida more than anything else. But I think you need to look at it that way. Like, some of these athletic departments are way better built than others. And I think as it stands right now, sorry, Florida fans, Ole Miss's athletic department is operating, especially with football, at a higher level than you. And they give Lane Kiffin everything he wants. Will he get those same assurances at Florida? I'm not so sure. They can. And here's the thing. They can promise him that he'll have full say, but what does it actually look like when he gets to campus if he takes that job? So I think we need to start viewing this in a different light. Not through history. Have they won a national championship in the 21st century?
Right.
I don't think you need to view it that way. Look at what Kurt Cignetti's doing at Indiana. You know what I mean? Like, you can do it anywhere. You just have to, you know, do your job the correct way and have the right support system behind the scenes. And right. I'm not sure that that's in place at Florida in the way that everybody's acting like it is.
Totally agree. So if we're comparing Florida to an NFL franchise, I'm just going to put it out there. I'm just going to give you the facts. Ooh. And I want you to name the franchise, because I have one in my head, but I also hate Florida and despise them with all of my heart. So
I wouldn't say you're going to go Cowboys here.
No, I'm not. It's going to be worse.
Because okay. they're not Cowboy level.
You have quarterback in place.
Okay.
Things around him aren't very good. You have a revolving door of coaches. You have an AD GM who you can't trust. And
let's be careful. Titans? Are we going? Let's be careful
with Titans.
I think they're better than that. But you know, I'd put them in like that. How about that Chargers pool?
Oh, don't just Isaiah's going to come through the glass. He's going to drive up here right now.
I think I'd put him in that.
No, Chargers.
Pool.
That's way too much credit to Florida.
Quarterback in place. At least solid talent wise, but incapable at least the past, you know, 10 to 15 years of getting over the hump or even really getting near the hump. You know what I mean? So I would.
Chargers is too. That's too good.
It's hard to
Titans
do a,
are too
it's,
bad.
It's really
Titans
hard
are too
to
bad.
Do a 1-to-1 comparison.
Yeah.
But I Titans is too bad.
Titans is too bad. Yeah. Okay.
I'd sort of look at Chargers.
There's got to be a middle team that isn't coming to mind right now for us.
If this was last year or a couple years ago, maybe the Dolphins.
The Dolphins popped my head,
but
I was like, "That's just
so terrible,
so much chaos yeah, with the Dolphins."
I don't know. That's a. We need to think on that one. We need to have a think tank on that one before we get back to our listeners.
There is an influx of G-Leaguers that have committed to college programs in the last few days. London Johnson committed to Louisville at 21 years old after 2 years with the G-League Ignite. There are others as well. Thierry Darlin committed to Santa Clara, and Abdullah Ahmed is expected to announce his decision in the coming days. Gabe, what are your thoughts on this?
So all these guys are G-League Ignite guys. So, like, there's part of me that looks at it and says, okay, G League Ignite is now defunct, so maybe this is just sort of a one-time thing, and we'll move past it. But you also have Overtime Elite out there, so that makes me completely pivot and talk out of both sides of my mouth. But what are my thoughts? I hate it. Now, the rationale that the NCAA has adopted is based on levels of compensation. If the dollar amount was low enough that it is deemed to only cover, quote, actual and necessary expenses, then there's a good chance that it will not impact NCAA eligibility if players are young enough to be within the 5 years.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know why it's not outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Your window of their high school graduation. That's the way they have gone about this. And the argument for people that are in support of this, which I don't see many, to be honest with you, is they'll say, well, look at the international players. They play professional in professional leagues from the time they're 15 on, make a bunch of money, and then they come over and they have been, you know, all over the place in college. I mean, Arizona State and Bobby Hurley signed 6 international players this offseason that are all 19, 20, 21 years old, whatever it is. But what I would say to people that make that argument is international is a little bit different. International, these guys can sign a contract at 13 years old. Like, do we want to, you know, if they sign a contract at 13, you want to keep them out of college basketball altogether? That doesn't jive with me. Some will sign at 14, 15. I don't think you should completely, you know, hold it against them if they make a decision before they're done with high school.
That also isn't directly affiliated with the NBA.
Correct. But if they make a decision before even high school to go the pro route, like, right. I don't think you should hold it against them and take away their college eligibility altogether. But my biggest takeaway is simple. The NCAA is clearly terrified of more litigation, and they've lost any semblance of backbone at this point. Because all three of these guys, when they signed with G League Ignite to take the contract and take that route, they all announced that they were foregoing their college eligibility. But now on the back end, when the G League Ignite is now defunct, we have changed the rules to allow them back in. Now all of them, I believe, will only be allowed 2 years of college eligibility as opposed to 4.
Oh, it's fixed!
So there's that. Here's my question, though, ultimately. Where does this stop? You know, if there's a guy who foregoes his eligibility, even in college, and declares for the NBA draft and doesn't find a home in the NBA, doesn't get drafted, doesn't get a, you know, contract, no two-way, anything like that, in the future, will he be able to come back and go through a waiver process to get back into college hoops, even though he went through the process of foregoing his eligibility to declare for the NBA draft? Like, I want to know where this stops, because this is opening up an avenue for a lot of these players that went out of their way to forego their eligibility and didn't want to play college hoops. But then they realize, okay, my developmental window, my chance to get to the NBA has been hindered by the decision I made. So now I actually want to go back to college. I don't know if that's how that should work. And I hate to be the what about the children guy, but I heard Tom Izzo say this, and I'm so with him. High school recruiting is getting destroyed. Like, these kids that are 3 stars that would have been able to sign at power conference schools or lower division I schools, even 2 stars, they're getting killed. They're having to go way different routes. JUCO, division II, division III, because it's so much easier, instead of trying to sign an 18-year-old who you have to develop, so much easier to say, well, this guy played professional basketball overseas. This guy played professional basketball in the G League. I can sign him at 21 years old. I feel like he's a pseudo-finished product. This guy I'd have to develop for 3 years. It's just an easier route for them to say, I'm going to take the 21-year-old. So I hate this for high school recruits, too. This really hurts their process and their chances of landing where they want to ultimately land. But that will do it for the Blitz. One more segment left in the day. We'll go ahead and rewind when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.